I've done all I can and I still feel like I'm not enough. Am I good enough for God? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin.
Hey, Tyler.
Brandon, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing okay.
You doing okay? You still have that sickness in your voice.
I know. We've got to stop talking about it. It's just,
I know. It's been like the longest, like never ending thing.
Oh my, you too. Like together, we're in this together, bro.
I know. We're just going to ride it out.
Hey, there's better days coming.
Yeah. My voice got deep a couple of weeks ago, and you actually complimented me like I had a radio voice, and now it's just the annoying sick voice. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, when you get sick, I always wonder if you're going to die. I mean, after you barely beat strep throat as a kid.
Almost COVID, killed me.
COVID about took you out.
Yeah, I know.
Dang. Like these things hit you hard.
I used to never get sick, but when I did, it was bad. So
yeah.
But the best part about strep throat as a kid is that I had strep throat and you were so jealous of me at the time that you were like telling my parents that I was faking.
I was like six and he ended up having rheumatic fever. They took you to the doctor and they said you didn't have anything. So I was just going along with the doctor.
Yeah, so like, I was deathly sick. And then they took me to the doctor and the doctors misdiagnosed it. It ended up as rheumatic fever. I almost died. And Brandon was like, he's faking.
I love how the most traumatic part of your rheumatic fever and almost dying is me calling you a faker.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, you better go do some EMDR on that one, Tyler.
I actually have never done EMDR on that. I might, Brandon. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, we got an awesome caller today. So I want to get into his story and what's going on with him. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Glad to be here.
If you could just give us a little bit of background, tell us whatever you need to tell us about you, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, sounds good. Love the banter between you guys. Like I said before, I'm a big fan, and I've got two brothers of my own, and we do the same thing. Doesn't matter what generation. So a little background about myself. 31, single, never been married, no kids, active member of my faith tradition of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Glad to be here. My stories, as far as my story generally goes, I've been going to 12-step meetings for about the last 12 years. So I started when I was about 18. I've done SA for LDS, Healing Through Christ, the church's ARP groups, the porn addiction specific groups. I've done individual therapy off and on for about the last 11 years, kind of gradually honing in on a particular practice that was more focused to what I specifically needed. Kind of like finding the right medical doctor, right? You need to find the one that understands your situation the best, I think. Currently, I think it was about 4 years ago or so that I came across the Betrayed Addicted Expert from one of my sponsors in a recovery group, which was Brandon's previous association. And then I started going to Brandon's clinic at Therapy Utah, and haven't regretted it since. I've had one or two therapists there, and I'm actually switching to another one just because, as we got into the question, I've done a lot of different things and kind of have a cyclical approach with recovery and healing. Lately I've been I've done a little EMDR. I kind of started in ART or started a little bit into ART with going into trauma work, but then finances kind of got a little short, and then I was trying to do things on my own. Recently I've been I read through Wild at Heart, and I'm doing the field guide right now. I'm a little over halfway done with Fathered by God, which I consider to be Wild at Heart 2.0. Mm-hmm. I might eventually read by the same author and his wife, The Captivating, to help with dating and such like that. But So that's kind of a little bit of a background on myself. I've done a lot of different things. As far as, you know, some of the worries and things that I'm going around is that I feel like I've been bouncing around from 12-step to 12-step group over the years, therapy, therapists, and I've been trying to figure out exactly what's holding me back. I've had different people, different therapists and sponsors that have kind of given me ideas of things that are holding me back. And I've come to this conclusion that, like per the question we have, that I feel like I'm not good enough for God, that, lots and lots of, rejection in dating. Recently went through a career change. I studied, for about 8 years to do work in a particular field. And then I was underperforming in that. And then I switched careers. It kind of cornered me. And so I feel like I've failed in that. And so there's a lot of failures going around, and currently I'm reading all these books, trying to kind of help me gain some traction. And I've got a new sponsor who I work pretty closely with, and he's a great guy. And shout out to my boys in the PG ARP group. But anyways, yeah. So that's a little bit of a background on myself, and I've got history of physical, emotional, and verbal abuse, kind of growing up as a kid. Parents divorced. I was kind of the parents divorced kind of dog that would bite you if you messed with me the wrong way kind of thing. So a lot of stuff I could share. So I figured that would be helpful up to this point.
Yeah. Tyler, do you want to start?
Sure. I just want to say it's interesting with your background that you just shared that you've been in this game for 13 years, fairly committed all along the way to trying to overcome the actual pornography use. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
And I can imagine this is what's crazy about it is that with that continued commitment over 13 years, but never quite feeling like you get a handle on it, it actually reinforces the very belief that you're here to talk about today, which is something must be wrong with me, or I'm not doing it right, or I'm the broken one, or whatever else it is. It's like the more you work on to kind of put a play on some scripture here, it's like you've had a form of recovery, but you've denied the power thereof for 13 years. And that actually fuels the shame that leads to this question you have, or this wrestle that you have with a higher power of not being good enough.
Hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So I got a question. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
You go ahead, Brandon.
No, because I'm going to take it down another road. So go ahead, Tyler.
I was just making that observation, and then I was basically just going to ask you, like, with what you just checked in with here, Adam, if there's a theme that goes across not just your recovery work, but the other things that you mentioned, is there a theme there that's directly attached to the way you view yourself or your personal value?
Well, the way that I view myself is not really a positive thing. I've actually shared this with family members, and a lot of them, you know, it kind of hurts them to hear this, but I don't really have a lot of, like, there's that compassionate self I think I learned about in one recovery group, where a little voice in your head that kind of reminds you of your worth and whatnot. And I've noticed mine's been turned way down. And so I have a lot of hatred towards myself and the person that I am, or specifically the things that I do. And so there's a lot of shame there, like you highlighted. I know that there's, in one aspect of recovery, or in trauma work, perhaps, that there, shame resiliency is a pretty good skill to have. And that's one that I haven't really developed a ton of. As far as the common theme goes, I think I've just noticed there's a lot of self-loathing and victim mode mentality that hasn't really helped me get enough traction. I guess, as you said, that I understand, like, I'm gratefully present enough that I can see the 12 steps working for a lot of people around me in ways that I am envious of, but I'm not able to get that traction, perhaps because I deny the power, you know, the real higher powers, they say in the 12 step groups, that maybe I'm just lacking that. And it could come back to deeper trauma stuff that I'm, you know, things that I've been working on in Wild at Heart Field Guide, that you know, the wounds that we have that are inflicted by society, by our fathers, by parents, by girls, whatever it is. I've been identifying those, and, you know, and I'm sure certain those will come up maybe throughout the show, but I don't know. I hope that kind of gives a solid answer for you.
Yeah, it does. I just maybe add to this, and then I think we'll go to Brandon, because Brandon's probably going to go a step deeper than this. But just the way you checked in the first 5 minutes, here is my 13-year history of my recovery. I don't feel like I'm good enough for God because I keep failing. And then I failed in my career. I failed in my relationships. In some ways, you failed as a child to your parents, not to mention all the trauma that's there. And somehow in your life, failure is the equivalent of self-loathing, which means you're not good enough, instead of it meaning something totally different than that. And it's probably autopilot. It's probably been there with you since before you could remember, but somehow that's defining you. And then when you try to motivate yourself from a place of self-loathing, what do? You go and produce more of the same so that you can self-loathe. Right.
Wonderful cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a frustrating place to be. Go ahead, Brandon.
Well, I am chomping at the bit here a little bit, Adam. When you say I haven't gained traction, what do you mean?
I feel like part of recovery, like I've seen the science and the neuropathology of addiction in general. The book He Restoreth My Soul by Dr. Clinton, I think,
or Hilton. Something. Hilton.
Yeah. Hilton. Clearly the experts. Thank you guys. how eventually, like, sobriety is needed in order for the brain to start creating those new neural pathways. And I understand that much of it. And so sobriety has kind of been a very part of that definition of, okay, am I improving? Okay. Yes. Because I've got this many days of sobriety because science has shown blah, blah, blah. Right. Part of me is frustrated because, you know, I see myself relapsing. I've been labeled a chronic relapser by some sponsors and by some people, that it happens so consistently that it's chronic. I'm not sure exactly how to describe it beyond that. That only, you know, I'll go a few days and then relapse, and then I'll go a couple, you know, the best I can do. I calculated it out, but over the last 9 years, the longest sobriety stretch I had was like 2 months. I've had a couple 30-day chippers, and beyond that, it's been constant. And I feel like if I was doing heroin or something, I'd probably OD already, or if I was an alcoholic, it would have been something else. But because it's porn addiction, it's a little different with how it manifests itself in my personal life. So when it comes to sobriety, I just kind of measure it based on that, I guess.
It's interesting that that's what I was wondering, is like, when you say traction, you know, do we go right to sobriety? Mm-hmm. And that's right where you went. And you know, Adam, if you were perfectly sober for so long that you forgot how long it's been, you were married and you had this job that you loved, would that then mean that God loves you?
That is the narrative that I've told myself. Spike, I think, is what y'all have called it in the past. But you know, I get to this point where I've arrived, now I'm worthy of God's love, right? And it's a bit of a perfectionist.
How is that problematic?
I don't know. It kind of banking all of that off of the fact that maybe I don't even know God, and I just assume that, okay, if I meet these qualifications, because I think it's some preconceived notion that if I meet these qualifications based on what other people have said, that I'll, you know, then I'll actually be worthy of love. But what if I get there and it's not true, you know? And so it causes extra fear. And so that's on the one hand. On the other hand, it's problematic because what if I never get there?
Right. You're trying to earn it, God's love.
Yeah.
There's a specific formula, in order to get God's love. So that sets up this fixed mindset. You're living in a ton of expectations meaning I expect, you know, if I do this, then that's going to happen, or I expect that this will happen, you know. So you're living in expectation and fixed mindset and wondering why you're feeling so unseen and unloved. And have you heard the be do have thing?
I have not.
So you're a do have beer. So if I do certain things, I'll have certain things, and then I'll be good enough. So if I work hard enough at recovery, you know, stay sober enough, I'll have my sobriety, which then means I am good enough. So you're a do have beer, right? Mm. We need to flip that on its head to be do have. I am good enough. I am loved, which is be do have means if I know that, then I'm going to live my life as if I'm good enough, as if I'm okay. And then I'm going to have peace. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's a very odd thing for me to think about. I try to keep things within my control as much as possible. And the whole like sphere of influence by Stephen R. Covey or the, you know, the serenity prayer, right? Like identifying what's in my control. And I try to identify that. And when I see what's in my control, I'm like, okay, the only way to get to where I want to be is by doing things.
But what's step three? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I know. It's basically allowing God, I can't quote it verbatim, but it's allowing God into, allowing some sort of higher power to restore me to sanity, I think.
That's step two. That's step two. So step three is turn your will and your life over to the care of God.
Yeah. Okay.
And so does that sound like you're in a lot of control?
No, it's the opposite.
It's right. Exactly. I mean, that's what step three is, right?
Yeah.
But it's interesting where you're going, like, you're going to, well, I try to do what's in my control in order to be good enough to live the serenity prayer in order to be okay, because I'm responsible for that. That's awesome that you want to take accountability. That's awesome that you want to do what's in your control. But when what's underneath that is shame in order to prove yourself, then it's going to cycle back into shame again. It's going to cycle back into addiction again and again and again. And so working the serenity prayer from that angle actually isn't working the serenity prayer, because you have to have that step three element where you turn your will and your life over to the care of God. You know yourself, you know your worth, and then you do what's in your control, not to prove anything, not to prove your worth. But from that energy of self-love, that energy of God fathering you, like you're learning from Eldridge's books, you understand that first and foremost, and then you'll just go do good, not to prove anything. Does that, am I making sense here? Like, is it?
Yeah, this is a concept I've come to in recovery, throughout my recovery journey, that I'm like, I don't really understand this. So put it on the back burner, because it'll make sense one day and I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. But if shame is the fuel of all of my actions, then I don't know. It's like I'm working off of fear, and you know, mm-hmm. if I don't do this or don't do that, that I'm never going to be good enough. It for me, it's just not a solid foundation, at least from what I've been meditating on in my personal lives, that fear is not a good fuel source. It doesn't last.
And yet it's hard to let go of it as motivation, because you've used it for so long. Sometimes when I say to people, get rid of the shame or the fear, and they're like, ah, well, I can't, because that motivates me to do good. But it's a foundation that leads you back to the very thing that you want to heal from. You know, it's
Yeah. It's pivotal, actually, Brandon. I just want to illustrate this really quickly for our listeners, and also for you, Adam, that shame is at the root of the do have be, which Brandon has mentioned that you're finding yourself in. I will do all of these things so that I can have these things, so that I can be good enough, right? But if you actually look at the 12 steps in order, and I'm just going to be just very quick with this, but if you look at the 12 steps in order, listen to what Brandon was talking about, the be do have. Steps 1, 2, and 3, We admitted that we're powerless and that our lives are unmanageable. We came to believe that there's a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. And we made a decision to turn our lives and will over to the care of God as we understand him. That's the B. We are now turning ourselves over in our current state to a higher power. And then you have the do's, steps 4 all the way through 11. Mm-hmm. Fearless moral inventory, admitted that we are the exact nature of our wrongs. We're entirely ready to have God remove these defects. We ask for him to remove our shortcomings. We make a list of the people we've harmed. We make amends. We take our inventory and we continue to improve our conscious contact with God. And then step 12 is have a spiritual awakening of these. Having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carry out this message to other people, basically. Yeah. So the 12 steps are actually in that order of be, do, have. But shame and its twin sisters, secrecy and fear, they flip the script. And then you can go through this list of things and you're going to get stuck on steps 4 through 11, doing amazing, hard, good work. And by the way, changing your life without accepting the change that it's giving you, because you're still living in that fear and shame of having, I've still got this problem, which makes me unworthy of love.
Mm.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that. I think Tyler probably deserves a gold star for reciting all 12 steps like that. But,
That makes me a good boy, Adam.
There you go.
Hey, you're good enough, Tyler.
You did it. You're good enough. There you go. I think that makes sense now. I hadn't heard of that before, but so you're saying that I do have B. Do have B.
Well, the do have B, Adam, the do have B is the reinforcement of something. Like the actual issue,
it's the reinforcement of a belief.
Yes, is a lens that you wear, a belief that you have that stems from your trauma. And then stems from you acting out and reinforcing that belief as a child, which is more trauma, mm-hmm. right? And so that there's a belief system that says, I'm not okay as I am. I need to earn this. Something broke inside of you at I don't know what age that told you, you have to prove yourself. You're not okay. You will fail again and again, and you're just a failure.
Yeah.
And so that's the lens that you wear. And so now you use this recovery thing to get more evidence of that and reinforce that belief. And so you'll never actually get into real recovery. So do you see the lens, Adam?
Yeah, it's like it's something so far. It's like something that I can see, like everything that I want is within reach. Or at least it's within sight, but I can't quite reach it. It's always right there, but I can't quite reach it because I'm missing something. And I mean, I've identified a couple of things where the narrative spike, I guess you could say, started to plant his filthy feet into my mind and soul, where I started to tell myself, okay, I'm not good enough unless I do this, right? And you know, there was an incident way back when, and that involved I tried to be a singer when I was a kid and have that identity grow up. Growing up, I tried to like figure out what kind of style, and you know, if I went on to like these awesome shows like American Idol or The Voice or whatever. And then my dad, being kind of the blunt guy that he is, he's like, I was like, Dad, I want to be a singer, and he's like, you're not that good. and granted, to his defense, he was right. I wasn't. Certainly I've gotten better over the years, and it's a skill I've honed in on with training. But I took that belief, and I've just one after another, all these experiences where I remember in like the fifth grade, I went out with a girl, you know, the little puppy love kind of experience. And she ended up breaking up with me, you know, as 12-year-olds do, I suppose. And I told myself when it came to the dating front that, oh, I'm not good enough for girls unless I, you know, she ended things because what kind of little boy doesn't pick their nose in front of other people and whatnot. So I, I got a nickname in the third grade and it stuck with till the eighth grade, and in fifth grade she found out about it and ended it. And so there was another case where, okay, if I had not done that thing, I'd be fine. So now I need to do all that I can to eliminate that habit, and then I'll be worthy for a girl. Right. And so that belief system has just been stacked so much that I don't know how to get out of it. And that's part of why I came on today. And it's part of why I'm wanting to jump back into deeper trauma work. Cause I feel like there's just something that I'm missing, and maybe it's this do have be or be have do or be do have kind of thing.
Who's doing this? Who's doing the stacking? When you say it's been stacked so much, who's doing the stacking of this, of reinforcement of this belief?
I think it's me. When something happens, I just tell myself, okay, well, there's something else that, you know, I relapsed again. Oh, and I relapsed again. All I'll ever do is relapse. Or if I get rejected, one rejection after another, and it just, I feel like it's me. I don't know if it's other people, but.
This is going to sound a little bit weird.
And weird. So let's
I like to know if how it sits with you, and maybe it doesn't sit with you at all, but I wonder if you need your addiction and you need relapse so that you have a reason to be rejected in all of these other parts of your life. What would happen if you weren't looking at porn and you went and dated a girl and she broke up with you because you picked your nose?
Oh.
But if she you were never worthy enough in the first place if you've got a porn problem. So if she rejects you, it's your fault because you're not clean yet. What if you went and put yourself out there for another job and got rejected again, but you didn't have that to fall back on to blame for, like, not having a clear mind or not having self-confidence? Or it's almost like you need the addiction to have the excuse to prevent you from facing what you believe, which is that at the core, you're unlovable.
Maybe that's why I'm holding on to it.
I don't know. I wonder if it's a subconscious thing that's not only coping with the pain in the moment, so it gives you that quick instant relief, but it's almost like you need it as the excuse so that you don't have to face what you think the facts are, which is that down at the core, from the time you were in third grade or earlier, that something about you is so broken that nobody would love you if they just saw you in your current state.
Yeah. I have, that wouldn't surprise me, if I'm being honest, that I don't know, I'm not really sure exactly how to respond to that. It feels true that I use the addiction as an excuse to maybe run from the real problem, right? The real problem being, or the real fear, I guess, of facing that unworthiness. And I don't know, it's easy for me, at least. I think it's easier to handle the addiction, ironically, because, you know, I can always put up porn blockers. I can put up, I can get rid of some technology. I can not go out with this person, whatever it is. Those are things that I can do to avoid the problem, I guess, or to resolve, find some sort of solution. But with this deeper inner demon, I guess, of the fear that I'm not worthy of anything, that I don't know, that just feels a lot scarier to have to confront. And it would, ironically, I'm wanting to confront it, right? Like, we in Fathered by God, you know, the stages of man that Eldridge talks about is from a beloved son to cowboy and adventurer to warrior to lover, king, and sage, right? And I'm trying to go through right now. I feel like I'm kind of at the cowboy stage, or at least I've been there for a while. I've had moments where I've gone back to the beloved son, or I might just need to go back to the beloved son completely and realize that even from my early childhood, even before that, that God has always loved me, that my parents have always loved me. And that's a belief that I've always had, but I don't know, maybe I'm not grasping it completely or something. You know, there's something I'm missing.
But. Adam, it kind of makes sense if we're using those stages from Fathered by God, that you're feeling sort of like stuck in this place of like cowboy. Just with the little information that you've just given us, you in the chosen son stage and transitioning into the cowboy stage, You were subjected to some significant trauma at school. You were subjected to some trauma from you, just the story you told about your dad, of all places, the wound coming, you're not that good. But like don't, you know, just a child doesn't hear the message of like, hey, the singing might not be your talent. The child hears the message and goes, oh. So it would make sense that you're kind of in this kind of stage in your own life of battling between the chosen son and the cowboy stage, because that's where the wound lies. That's where the transition started to happen from. You were born. When you were born, were you worthy of love, Adam?
I presume.
I mean, just by being born, any human being who's born is probably worthy of love. Can we agree on that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So something between you being born and, let's just say, being in third grade, something changed inside of you that made you unlovable. Why?
I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. We might have to do another six podcasts on to get to. Growing up, my parents divorced when I was younger, and I've attributed a lot of my problems to kind of that era of my life. And your question is kind of reflected back in that era. I don't know at what age you're in third grade. It might have been like 6 or 7 or 8 or something, but parents officially divorced at 10. And I thought that even prior to that, there were problems all through my childhood of mom and dad fighting and me trying to get their attention. Of course, I had middle child syndrome for days, right?
How many kids are in your family?
Four.
Okay.
So they're not a ton, but by certain standards. But you know, I don't really know the answer to that question, which is kind of saying something, because I'm usually one with chock full of answers and useless information. But I don't really know the answer to that question. I think that would be something worth diving into more.
It's interesting. I mean, I just want to ask you this, and I know you're reading all the books, Eldridge. Does God love you the same way as your dad loves you?
I would say no.
Okay, what's the difference?
I believe, well, I'm trying to believe that God loves me in a way that is so unconditional and pure that it doesn't matter what I've done, I can always go back to him for help and for guidance, regardless of what I've done, right? There's no shame. I really believe in the Christian theology of grace and how it doesn't matter what I've done, I can find God, that he's always there. He's always loved me. But for some reason, I don't accept it into like the core of my being.
It's what Tyler was getting at. So it's you. What you just said is beautiful and wonderful, and you know that here,
mm-hmm.
but you don't know that. You know something different because of your experiences. And I'm not saying this to rip on your dad or anything, because all of us dads are imperfect, but your dad loved you conditionally because he's human. He couldn't love you perfectly. And your experience with your mom and dad was this conditional, imperfect love growing up. And that conditional, imperfect love is what taught you your belief system, your lens that you wear. I'm not okay unless I perform. I'm not okay unless I, you know, get certain things. And also, I'm a failure. I'm just a failure that's going to let people down. And that those beliefs, that's all just made up. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, but he didn't know it was being made up, because he was just a kid living the way a kid does, experiencing the world the way he did. And so he could only make sense of it in the way that he did. That's what's the trap about all of this, is he didn't even know he was making up these lies.
But it's also the beauty of this life is, as we get to untangle that, because we all get that to some degree. As we get to untangle that, that's how we know ourselves. That's how we know God. And so it's this weird experience that we all have where we have trauma, we have belief systems, we create things because of our belief systems, and then we have a choice. We have a choice to keep doing that and keep destroying ourselves, or to get humble, to look within, and to allow God's love back in. And that's where we find ourselves again. And I mean, in the Bible, it talks about getting a white stone, and that white stone is a new name. It's eternal. It's always there. And so we get to go on this journey of knowing ourselves again. Now, a lot of people aren't willing to do it because it means taking away all of these safeguards. Now, Adam, you're a controlling person. You want to control things. I want to control things. I want to make sure that I have the power in order to create this, or I can do this, or I can do that. So it's really scary to let go of that control and the defense mechanisms to open up your heart to then know and feel God's love. Do you see it?
I think so. Part of me doesn't want to see it because I know it's true. I've been, I don't know. That's just the person that I've become, the narrative I've told myself, whatever the case is. It's all I know is that I am who I am right now. And I know that to go from here to here, where the one side is being where I'm at and the other is where I want to be, that I need to, something needs to change, something needs to occur. And I think over the last 6 months or so, there's been a lot of changes in my life where things have kind of come crashing down, that it's caused me to wake up almost like I'm someone who's always been asleep, and I'm just waking up for the first time to all of the problems and things that I've done and whatnot, the faulty core beliefs, if you will. Having to get to that stage, I guess, is part of the journey that I knew was going to come eventually. I just hope it wouldn't. Yeah. Having to give up control and whatnot, but
it's an inevitable part of the process, though. And it's interesting that the things that have come crashing down are the very things that then allow you to, I love how you said, wake up from a sleep. Like you're starting to actually pull these things that have been automatic in your life to the surface now. And once they rise to the surface, you can see them. And it's like, oh, there's this belief system that I've been living with for the last 20 years that I didn't even ever know was there or cause to question it. Mm-hmm. Now that it's there, it's teased to the surface. This is where Brannon's going. It's like, now we get a chance to decide what we're going to do with that belief system. And where, what I think is probably happening is that there's an 8 to 10 year old kid in there somewhere that's working really hard to have you not address that belief system, because that kid learned that doing was the way to not get punished. And now the very direction that you need to go with your recovery is the hardest thing you'll ever do with your recovery is to surrender the need to do. to actually confront that cave of identity of be. Who am I? Who am I? And to sit with that without having to do anything. And there's an 8 to 10 year old kid that's been so rejected and so hurt that still believes in that old way of believing that says, if you don't do something, you're not good enough, that it's like pulling teeth to get yourself to sit with that question of be, who am I? To God, who am I? What is on the white stone, so to speak? Mm-hmm. Regardless of what I do, what's on the white stone? And that's really difficult. You're the guy who, as soon as you figure out steps 1, 2, and 3, the rest of them, you've already nailed it. You've got it.
Yeah. My
steps 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. That would line up with what several sponsors with years of recovery have told me, that you struggle with steps 1, 2, and 3 with all these beliefs but you do all this other stuff. There's just something disconnecting, and I'm I'm really holding out to that hope that even with all of the 13 years of recovery that I've let's say tried and failed, I would add, that when something just clicks, I hope that regardless of, or the white stone situation, right? If I can accept the white stone, I love that it's a white stone because the symbol of purity with whiteness, it shows that, right, that we can be cleansed from whatever bad things we've done or whatever things that I've done. And it still doesn't change the fact of who I've been since the beginning. Right. And, yeah, I guess that's a system. That's something I'm not, fully aware of, or I haven't accepted. Right.
Adam, you said something like, you know, there's where I'm at and then there's where I want to be. And that's concerning to me, because there, what I'm hearing that lens, that perspective of this deficiency model. I'm deficient. When you first opened up and were telling us about you, it was you going through the list of all the ways in which your life hasn't become what it should be,
mm-hmm.
and how you failed. And so, you know, my career, I tried this career for a long time, and you know, I wasn't good at it, so I had to shift, and trying to get married or relationships haven't worked, and my recovery, failure, 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 right? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I could hear your story and I could hear success, 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 growth, 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 resilience. This dude's a badass. Like, holy cow, look at him. And I can give you specific examples of that just from the little bit that you told me. Now, you're going to be uncomfortable with that because you want the story of I'm failing. And it's what Tyler was saying. There's something inside of you that says, I want to play that. I just want to keep playing that tune in my head. And how could I say you're a success? How could I say you're resilient?
Because I haven't given up, maybe.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
For you being here today, holy cow. You started recovery work. How old were you?
18.
You know how many guys do that?
Not a lot.
Yeah, you did.
Not the, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I try to avoid tooting that horn a lot of the time.
Did you actually get a sponsor? And did you actually call a sponsor? You know how many guys don't do that? Like, you were in the top of what you're doing for recovery, and you're looking at, but I'm a chronic relapser. So it doesn't matter. All this stuff that I do, it doesn't matter because I continue to masturbate or whatever. And so you look at the evidence of, see, I'm the failure. But if we take a zoom out, we can look at this and say, Adam's the freaking man. And always has been. Is that hard to hear? Go ahead, Tyler.
Could I ask you, I want to go along that same thread for a second. Can I ask you from your Christian perspective, what's the purpose of this life, Adam?
For me, it's to grow and to become.
It's to grow and become what?
All that he's intended us to be, like he is, right?
Okay, to become like him.
Yeah.
Okay, I agree with you. That's kind of how I see the world. And the way that we understand the world as Christians is that we come to a world that actually
is fallen.
It is fallen. For what reason?
I would say for us to realize that we need him.
Okay, it's to actually help us to come to know him through our experience, right? I've shared this a long, long time ago on the podcast, but I want to read it to you from that perspective. And what did God provide so that you could come to a fallen world and have experience?
I would say is his son.
He provided his son, the ultimate source of grace that you were talking about earlier.
It's Jesus Christ, yeah.
Right? So, and Jesus Christ came and he basically filled in all the gaps. He filled in the gaps for all of your future relapses already.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. So it's already there. It's already been paid for. You can go relapse and it's already been paid for. Now think of it from that perspective: grace, experience, coming to know Christ, trying to understand who he is, and go along with what Brannon just said to C.S. Lewis. It says, "No man knows how bad he is until he's tried very hard to be good. A silly idea is current that good people do not know what temptation means. This is an obvious lie. Only those who try to resist temptation know how strong it is. After all, you find out the strength of the German army by fighting against it, not by giving in. You find out the strength of the wind by trying to walk against it, not by lying down. A man who gives in to temptation after 5 minutes simply does not know what it would have been like an hour later. That is why bad people, in one sense, know very little about badness. They have lived a sheltered life by always giving in. We never find out the strength of the evil impulse inside us until we try to fight it. And Christ, because he was the only man who never yielded to temptation, is the only man who knows to the full what temptation means, the only complete realist." Is it possible that your 13-year struggle, that every time you relapse, it's an opportunity to actually know God better, to come to understand him? That the battle that you fight every day is actually a way of emulating him?
I hadn't thought of it that way before. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way before, but I know I believe in one spiritual devotional I heard once, that when we are in the trenches per se, trying to lift up the poor and needy and mourn with those that mourn right and all that, that we are standing shoulder to shoulder with Christ. And I think that's how I don't know, that came to mind when you shared that. I mean, if I just sit on the side and let like lay down on the ground and let the wind come over, I don't really know how strong the wind is until I stand up and experience.
You've been standing up.
You've been standing up all along. That's what Brannon's point is. Inside of a really difficult thing.
For you to appreciate yourself for doing that. For you to realize who you are on a soul level for doing that. And to stop that narrative of, see, I'm just a failure. See, I'm just a failure. That's all I am. So when we talk about be, do, have, the be does not mean you have to do something to then be okay. It means right now, in this moment, be for Adam right now. Who is he? Who is he as a son of God? Who is he as a warrior for God? Right? Right now.
He is a work in progress.
If you masturbated this morning, right now, in this moment, right now, you're beautiful. You're amazing. You are loved beyond comprehension. And I can tell you this again and again and again. The way that this sinks into your heart, do you know how it does?
Humility? I don't know.
You have to act against the systems that are getting in the way. You have to strip back the trying to prove yourself. You have to love yourself, the belief, even if you fail. Fight it. Yeah. So,
okay.
Adam, we're running low on time, man. Sure. I hate to end this discussion because I feel like we could go on and on with you. And
all good.
I've really enjoyed talking to you and hearing about your struggles, but also the feeling of openness that you have about looking at things differently. So,
I'm definitely not the judge and don't want to add to your own false beliefs, but you're a good dude, man. Like, it's been a pleasure to visit with you today, and thank you for your willingness to come on and share the way that you do.
Yeah. Well, thanks all that you guys do for brothers like me and for the women and those that struggle. You know, it's really nice. I enjoy what you guys do. So
yeah, well, keep going. Keep up the great journey that you're on, Adam. Even in the difficulty of it all, it can be a beautiful, wonderful journey. And you are, without knowing it, you are transforming yourself on a daily basis. You're just focused on the things that are bringing you down instead of the ways that you're changing and growing. So for everyone else listening, if you hear that, if you feel that, if this makes sense to you, or you know somebody who would really relate to what Adam just shared here, please pass it along. Please share it. Throw a shout out to him in the comments or something. And until next time, you guys keep on keeping on.